Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing our reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the first canto, chapter 17. And today's text should be 15. Anagasu iha bhuteshu ya agaskrin nirankushaha aharatasmi bhujam sakshad amartyasyapi sangadam anagashviha ibhuteshu ya agaskrin nirankushaha ahartasmi bhujang sakshad amartyasyapi sangadam anagashviha bhuteshu ya agaskrin nirankushaha ahartasmi bhujang sakshad amartyasyapi sangadam anagasviha bhuteshu ya agaskrin nirankushaha ahartasmi bhujang sakshad amartyasyapi sangadam. Please chant. Anagasviha bhuteshu ya agaskrin nirankushaha ahartasmi bhujang sakshan amartyasyapi sangadam Anagasviha bhuteshu anagaskrin nirankushaha ahartasmi bhujang sakshan amartyasyapi sangadam Vaishnavis. Anagasviha bhuteshu ya agaskrin nirankushaha ahartasvi bhujang sakshan amartyasyapi sangadam ya agaskrin nirankushaha ahartasmi bhujang sakshad amartyasyapi sangadam anagasviha bhuteshu ya agaskrin nirankushaha ahartasmi bhujang sakshad synonyms, anagashu'iha, to the offenseless, bhuteshu, living beings, yaha, the person, agakrit, commits offense, nirankushaha, upstart, aharta asmi, I shall bring forth, bhujam, arms, sakshat, directly, amartyasya api, even one who is a demigod, saanganam, with decorations and armor. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse: an upstart living being who commits offenses by torturing those who are offenseless shall be directly uprooted by me, even though he be a denizen of heaven with armor and decorations. Please repeat. An upstart living being who commits offenses by torturing those who are offenseless shall be directly uprooted by me, even though he be a denizen of heaven with armor and decorations. Srila Prabhupada's purport: the denizens of the heavenly kingdom are called Amara, or deathless, due to their possessing a long span of life far greater than that of the human beings. For a human being who has only a maximum 100-year duration of life, a span of life spreading over millions of years is certainly considered to be deathless. For example, from the Bhagavad Gita, we learn that on the Brahmaloka planet, the duration of one day is calculated to be 4,300,000 times 1,000 solar years. Similarly, in other heavenly planets, one day is calculated to be 6 months of this planet, and the inhabitants get a life of 10 million of their years. Therefore, in all higher planets, since the span of life is far greater than that of the human being, the denizens are called deathless by imagination, although actually no one within the material universe is deathless. Maharaj Parikshit challenges even such denizens of heaven if they torture the offenseless. This means that the state executive head must be as strong as Maharaj Parikshit so that he may be determined to punish the strongest offenders. It should be the principle of a state executive head that the offender of the codes of God is always punished. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityanamine Namaste Saraswate Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvashesha Shunyavari Paschatadeshtani Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Unmilitam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtang Shapitang Jaina Bhutale Swayamrupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeyaham Shri Guru Shri Tapada Kamalam Shri Guru and Vaishyavangsha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Bhutam Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savarutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada and Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Bhutangsha A Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kopaturubhyasya Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaisavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Chivasari Gaur Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. So the first point in the purport is about the duration of life. That on this planet, in this age, 100 years. We discussed in the previous class that there are some regions of this planet where people still live beyond that a little bit, 120, maybe even 130. But on average, 100 years, and even that is difficult to reach. If you die at 70, 80, they consider you to be an old man. You lived a nice life, 70 years old, 80 years old. But here we're understanding that in other parts of the universe, this is like a flash. Prabhupada mentions Brahma's planet, that 4,300,000 times 1,000 yuga cycles is one day of Brahma. So when you do the calculation, it comes that the duration of his life by his 100 years, 311 trillion 40 billion years. So, certainly from our perspective, that seems like deathless. That's like, can't even imagine living that long. And then he mentions that on the level of the demigods, 6 of our months equals to 1 of their day. So if you do that calculation, 1 of their years is 1,100 or 1,100 of our years. And so they live 10 million such years by their calculation. So by our calculation, they live for 11 billion years. But 11 billion years compared to Lord Brahma, again, is like nothing. Every time he turns around, there's a new Indra, there's a new Chandra, a new Varuna. It's like, can't keep track of them. They're changing all the time. What's going on? Like, that's from Brahma's perspective. From our perspective, 11 billion years would be like, whoa, to live that long? Can't imagine, again. So, this is the, as Prabhupada said himself many times, this is relativity. They're very proud of Einstein and others. They're discussing the theory of relativity, but that's already there within the universe by Krishna's arrangement. That depending on what sphere of the material world you're living on, your perception of time, your duration of time that you're allowed to live, all varies. Prabhupada spoke about in India, we don't see them here so much in Southern California, but in India, there are some insects. They come out, take birth, mature, have their sex intercourse, produce the next generation, and die all in one night. So for them, their one night is like a long, long time. But for us, it's like you come out the next morning and you see so many dead insects on there, and it's like, where did this come from? I went to bed last night, the driveway was clear, now I wake up and it's completely full of insects. So, depending on your level of existence within the universe, your perception of time and your duration of life changes. This is relativity. But beyond the perceivable is the imperceptible, and that is the soul, the driving force behind all of this activity, whether it's on the insect level or the human level or on the demigod level or all the way up to Brahmaloka, the highest region of this universe. Then the next point Prabhupada makes is that Parikshit Maharaj is stating that he's willing to fight anyone, even somebody coming from some of those higher regions, like the heavenly planets, the demigods. He's willing to fight them if they offend offenseless creatures. So it's not an idle boast. He had the power to do it. And he's not alone. We know from the history of the Mahabharata, there are so many other kings, earthly kings, who had that power, like Kattanga Maharaj. He was such a powerful earthly king that the demigods invited him to come and help them fight the demons. He was so powerful. And in his case, he fought valiantly and helped them defeat the demons, and they were willing to reward him. What do you want? Well, I just want to know how much more time I have to live. You have 1 second. Okay, let me surrender to Krishna. Boom. So the prophet said that surrendering business can be taken care of in one moment if you're serious. He knew he had one more moment to live, so he became serious. All right, I'm surrendering to Krishna. Go back to Godhead. We don't know even if we have one moment, so we have to be ready at any moment. This is the point. Again, recently we had so many tremors here in Southern California. And we know from experience it could be much more serious than it was. 94, right here. All the marble fell down. It was such a powerful earthquake. Previously everything that's wood here was marble. And it all came crashing down that morning. I was in San Diego at the time, so we immediately called LA to find out what happened. And they said, no, all the devotees are okay. So we don't even know if we have a moment. So we have to be serious. And then we have others, like Muchukunda, we know from chapter 51 of Krishna book, or 10th canto, chapter 51, Deliverance of Muchukunda. He was a great king coming down in the line of Ikshvaku Maharaj. Again, earthly king, but so powerful that the demigods invited him to come and fight and help them defeat the demons. And he did. He went and he fought valiantly, defeated, and helped them to defeat the demons, so they wanted to give him some benediction. Kartikeya, he was a general of the demigods. Muchukunda Maharaj, what would you like as a benediction? I can give you anything except, he said, if you read it, that chapter, he said, I can give you anything except immortality. That I can't do. Only Krishna can do that. Only Krishna can deliver you from the world of death. Maraloka. He said, I can give you anything. He said, you know, I've gone without sleep for so long, I just want to sleep. But I want you to give me the benediction that anybody who awakens me untimely, just by glancing at them, I'll burn them to ashes. Yes, granted. So he came back to earth, and he went to sleep in a cave near Mathura. I don't know, maybe Ardina Bandhu knows that place. I've never been there. But so he went to sleep. And Krishna, being the all-knowing Supreme Personality of God, knew the whole story. He knew Mushikunda, where he was sleeping. So when this Kaliyavana was chasing Krishna, wanting to fight with him, it stated that those who are outside the Vedic culture, they're not even worth fighting with. So Krishna didn't want to fight with them. You have your Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, and anything below that. Mulechas, Yavanas, not even worth interacting with. So Krishna, in his Vishnu form in this case, he didn't want to fight with him. So he led him into this cave where Mushikunda was sleeping, and then he disappeared. So Kaliyavana came in and he saw this person lying on the floor, and he thought it was Krishna, and he kicked him. Mushikunda woke up and burned him to ashes with his glance. So again, that was another example of a great earthly king who could fight. But in this case, even closer to home, Parikshit's own grandfather, Arjuna, several times fought with denizens of higher planets. When the Pandavas were in exile, Vyasadeva would frequently come and give them instructions. So he came and told them that the king of Panchala, he is going to have Swayamvara for his daughter. What was the daughter's name? Draupadi, yes. He said he's going to have the Swayamvara, and she's a fit prospective bride for Arjuna, so you should go and participate in the Swayamvara ceremony. So they were hurrying to get there on time. They came to the Ganges, paid their respects to Mother Ganga, and they were looking for a place to cross. And all of a sudden, this voice came out and said, "You don't belong here. This place belongs to us. Leave immediately." So Arjuna's thinking, who's... And then this Gandharva, Chitrarata was his name. He said, "This area belongs to us at this time of the day. You're able to come here up to dusk. After that, during this period of the night, this area belongs to us. So leave immediately." No problem. So Arjuna said, "No, you cannot order us like this." So immediately they engage in a battle. And all Arjuna had at that moment was a torch. It was night. He had a torch in his hand and they were looking for a place to cross. So this Gandharva, Chitrarata, he's just rained arrows and weapons and Arjuna. Just with that torch, he was counteracting all of his weapons. So the demigod became frustrated and he started throwing celestial weapons. And Arjuna invoked his Agniastra, which is a fire weapon that he got from the fire god Agni, Agniastra. So with that weapon, he defeated Chitrarata and all of his soldiers. So Chitrarata surrendered. Like that, so many times. Arjuna was very powerful warrior. Another time, when the Kauravas, headed by Duryodhana and Shakuni, they decided it wasn't enough that the Pandavas were in exile. They wanted to embarrass them. So they got permission from Dhritarashtra. At first he was telling them, "No, leave them alone," but they bothered him so much that they said, "Okay, yes." So they put together all of their royal paraphernalia, thousands and thousands of chariots and elephants and all royal paraphernalia and their queens, and they knew approximately where the Pandavas were. So they came to this river, this lake, and they knew on the other side the Pandavas were there and they wanted to cross. But Indra understood the situation and he didn't like this fact. So he sent this Gandharva named Chitrasena to arrest Duryodhana and company. So Chitrasena stopped them. "You cannot cross. Who are you? Look at us. Don't you see what's in front of you? This huge army of elephants and chariots. And you cannot cross." So they engage in a battle. And the Gandharvas, headed by Chitrasena, they just were cutting them down like anything. The only one that was having any success against them was, who was the best fighter on the Kaurava side? Karna. Karna was killing them like anything. But eventually they just ganged up on him and they defeated him. And he arrested Duryodhana and Karna and Shakuni, the whole lot, and they brought them. But Arjuna came and said, "No, release them. They're our relatives." "No, Indra told us to arrest them." "No, release them." So they got into a battle with Arjuna. And again, Arjuna, with his prowess, he defeated them. He defeated Chitrasena and all of the Gandharvas. He was killing so many of them. So finally, Chitrasena said, it's my order to take them back to Indra. And Arjuna said, no. And Arjuna said, okay, Yudhisthira's Dhammaraj, we'll let him decide. So they brought Duryodhana and company chained up in front of Yudhisthira. And Yudhisthira said, no, let them go. So Chitrasena obeyed and they were released. But Duryodhana was so humiliated. He wanted to humiliate the Pandavas by displaying his royal paraphernalia and power. But instead, he was humiliated. He was humiliated. So, in general, this is our situation in the material world. We want to show off our possessions to each other and even to God. We want to show God how much we have accumulated. As Narottar was quoting yesterday from the 16th chapter. So much do I have now, and in the future I'll gain more according to my schemes. So much wealth do I possess, and it will increase in the future more and more. He's my enemy, and I've killed him. And my other enemies would also be killed. And the conclusion of that whole section is Ishwarahang Ahang Bogi Siddoham Balavan Sukhi. This is the mentality of the demon. Ishwara Aham. I am the controller. Don't you see? I am president. I am CEO. I am whatever. I am the controller. Ishwara Ahang. Ahang Bogi. And because I am controlling, then I am enjoying. Prabhupada said, you cannot be an enjoyer if you don't have control. If you're trying to enjoy something and it's not under your control, then you can't really enjoy. So they think, first of all, I am the controller, and therefore I am the enjoyer. Siddoham, I am perfect. Don't you dare criticize me. I am perfect. You see? And then when they take these positions, they have that mentality. If you dare to criticize them, they will snuff you out or try their best to snuff you out. How can you criticize me? I am the president. I am the dictator. I am whatever. Don't you dare criticize me. Siddoham, Balavan, I'm very powerful. Sukhi, I am happy. But we know, behind the scenes, they're all in anxiety, because this is the material world. It's Martyaloka, as we just said in the beginning. Even if you live a life as long as Lord Brahma, 311 trillion 40 billion years, still, you're going to have to leave at some point. From the lowest planet to the highest, they are all places of misery wherein repeated birth and death takes place. So behind the scenes, they're very, very afraid. They're in anxiety because they don't know ultimately what's going to happen down the road. They know intrinsically that they're actually under the control of time. Even though I'm telling everybody, Ishwara Hung, I am the controller, they know at heart I'm being controlled by time. Kalosmi lokashaya pravidha lokan samahartum pravidha, Krishna says. Time I am, the destroyer of all worlds. End of 11th chapter. So everybody knows this at heart. So even Hiranyakashipu, who did have control of the whole universe, even he was in anxiety. And his son Prahlad could see that. That's why I'm not surrendering to you. Why should I surrender to somebody who's in anxiety? There's something beyond you that's making you anxious. So when Hiranyakashipu asked him, what is the greatest thing you've learned? He told him, Tatsadamanya Suravayadehina, Samasabudmigna, Diyam Asadgrihat, Ittuatmapatam, Griyam Andakupam, Parambajet Yad Harim Ashrayeta. Said, according to those who have proper vision, Tatsadamanya Asuravayad, O best of the Asuras, Dehina, Sadasamudmigna, Diyam Asadgrihat. Because you have taken a vow to enjoy that which is temporary, asat, then you're full of anxiety. This is the cause of your anxiety. This is the cause of all of our anxiety. We're trying to enjoy, first of all, this body, which is temporary. We all know it. It's simply a bag of mucus, air, and bile, skin bag full of mucus, air, and bile. And it's full of troubles, always giving trouble. Just like most of you know, I'm wearing compression socks all the time because I have edema in both legs. And now all of a sudden, in one leg, I get this throbbing. I don't know what's going on. We are thinking this is me, but we don't even know what's going on with myself if I'm thinking this is me. Something happens, I have to run to Dr. Bhutta or somebody. Do some imaging so I can see exactly what's going on. We don't know. Yet we're so foolish. We're thinking this is me, and I'm going to enjoy through these senses. There's no enjoyment here. There's no enjoyment here. So it's just temporary cessation of misery is taken as enjoyment. Prophet gave the example of a dunking stool. In the Middle Ages, they used to have this contraption called a dunking stool. And when somebody was an offender, and they didn't want to kill them outright, but they wanted to bring them to an inch of death, they strapped them into this stool, chair, and they bring it into a water, body of water, and they tip it so that the person strapped in the chair, they are underwater. And just as they think, I can't stay any longer, I'm going to die, I'm going to drown, bring them up. So, they get a breath of air, and they feel relief. So, material life is like that. At every moment, the material energy is kicking us. Adhyatmic, adabotic, adhyatmic miseries. And when there's just a slight cessation of misery, we think, I'm happy. I'm very happy. Don't you see? Ishwaraham, ahang bogi. They're not in control. Krishna's in control at every moment. Time is in control at every moment. Pushing everything along. Creating, maintaining, and destroying. And we're along for the ride. It's just amazing. This tiny little planet that we live on, it's like a speck of cosmic dust in relation to the whole universe. And it's rotating, we know. It's moving. It's rotating on its axis, and it's moving on a path around the sun. And so many things are going on. Why all of this is happening? It's just like if you're driving in your car, and so many living entities are doing things inside the car, which is a fact. In every car, I guarantee, there are so many little spiders and insects that you can't see. You leave your car long enough, you come back, and even inside, there's cobwebs. So many things are going on in this tiny little planet that we're all traveling on. It's like being on a bus going from Mumbai to Delhi. So many living entities on this planet simultaneously engaging in so many activities and producing so many byproducts, taking birth, dying. And we're thinking this is all in all, this one little earth planet. And I'm the most important person on this planet. And when the rest of you wake up and realize that, then you'll be happy. Everybody's thinking like that. Even the child. We have so many mothers here, you know. As soon as they can walk, they want to declare their independence. Leave me alone. Let me do my own thing. They want to run out the door. They want to go here and there. And so the poor mother, just like Mother Yashoda with Krishna, she has to always be in anxiety. Where is Krishna? But her anxiety, that spiritual anxiety, is actually pleasure. On our level of existence, we have real anxiety. Because we are not aware of the fact that we are actually amara, deathless. We're thinking that we're vulnerable. So I have to make so many plans to keep myself from dying, to keep myself from being hurt, to keep myself... So many plans I have to make. And when my plans conflict with your plans, then we fight. You see? So it's just a huge mess. We have made a mess out of it. But if, like Parikshit and his forefathers, we are on the path of Dharma, then there can be some order, some stability, and some degree of happiness if things are done the way Krishna wants them done. Ultimately, Krishna is Dharmaraj. Krishna is the creator, maintainer of the Varnashram Dharma system. Chatur Varna Mayashishtam, Guna Karma Vibhakasa, he says, fourth chapter. He has created a system, and if we follow that system, then there's a chance of happiness, stability, progress. But because we are outside of Varnashram Dharma, Mulecha Yavana, and even less, Kirata Hunanja Pulinduk Pukasa, Abir Yumba, Yavana Kashara, Yene Chapapa Yadapasha Yasha, Shudyanti Tasmai Prabhavishnave Namaha. Who knows who said that verse, recited that verse? Shukadev Goswami, yes, second canto. Chapter 4. I've mentioned many times that there are so many prayers in the Bhagavatam, Kunti's prayers and Uddhava's prayers, Akrura's prayers, so many prayers, but the speaker of the Bhagavatam, he himself has a set of prayers in the second canto that most devotees don't bother to memorize. Which is amazing because they're beautiful prayers. Beautiful prayers. So he starts out by glorifying Krishna. Namaktamasmai purushaya bhuyase yat udbhavastana nirodha lilaya grihita shakti chitayaya dehinam antarabhahar yanti apavayalapartvartmane. Very, very beautiful prayers. So he's, like most prayers, they start out by glorifying the Lord's position. Namak parasmai purushai. Yad udbabastan in road. This whole material world, the creation, maintenance of the destruction, is going on by your energy. It's you. And so that's the first point we have to learn. We have to learn that everything here that's being created, that creation is actually done by Krishna. I may be a great cook creating so many nice subjis, but ultimately it's Krishna. Krishna's given the ingredients, the veggies, the milk from the cow to make the ghee, to make the curd, the spices, and the intelligence how to put it all together. Everything is coming from Krishna. That's why when the subji is done, first we offer it to Krishna. And we are like that. We're supposed to offer everything, not just the subji. Everything that we do. But we don't make, even as devotees, we make distinction. Now I'm in the temple, I'm making a subji, or I'm whatever, doing something in the temple for Krishna. But then I have a right to go do my own thing. No, there is no own thing. There is no own thing. Everything that we supposedly own, our intelligence, our bodies, everything belongs to Krishna. So everything is meant to be made as an offering to Krishna. Krishna says that. Yat karoshiya asnashiya to hosita datiyat. Everything that you do, you offer, anything, is for my satisfaction. It should be given to me. And happily we should do that. Happily we should do that. If somebody comes out of the blue and gives you $1,000, oh, for the rest of my life I remember this person. I was in such anxiety for money, and then this old friend came and gave me $1,000, and you tell the story over and over again. But everything that we have now, that we've ever had in the past and we will have in the future, Krishna's given us. So how much grateful should we be? But that we don't put two and two together. Yeah, yeah, God, whatever. But my friend John, such a nice man, he gave me $1,000. That I remember. So that's foolishness. That's foolishness. So we need to wake up, and that's why the beginning of spiritual life is Jeev Jago, wake up. Try to see things as they are and not as we would like them to be. And if we have that mentality of wanting to see things as they are, then the scriptures inform us exactly what's going on. There's a Supreme Lord who expands himself into so many swangsas, personal expansions, and vibhinangsa, which is you and all the living entities. And what is the interaction between the vibhinangsa and the swangsa? And the material energy, the five subject matters of the Bhagavad Gita, we should know. Ishvara, the Jiva, Prakriti, Karma, and Kala. We should know these things very thoroughly. And then we can live without any anxiety because we're seeing things clearly as they are. And that's what we're meant to offer to the rest of society. If we can't see things clearly, how can we go out there and preach? So we have to see things clearly, and then we can go out there and tell people exactly what's going on, because they're all in anxiety. And they don't know why, what's going on, what to do. They contemplate suicide. They contemplate murder. Just to get back at society for not making me happy. So it's a very big job for us to do, very tough task. Go out and convince people of the reality. No, you're not the controller. You're not the enjoyer. You're not the Ishwar. You're not the bogey. You're not perfect, at least not in your material manifestation. And therefore, wake up. Surrender to Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna, be happy. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, we have a few minutes for any questions, comments. Yes, Rabindranath Prabhu.
Yes, mentioned that the demigods live for a very, very long time compared to the humans on this planet. But does that mean they have more time to do more things, or it just seems like they have, or they have a longer amount of time? Just like when we get the example of Lord Brahma, when he stole the cowherd boys, he was gone for a whole year according to Earth's calculation, but it seemed just like a moment.
Yeah, but because of relativity, it varies. Just like when Lord Brahma comes to this planet, he goes to Dwarka, and he approaches the gates, and the gatekeeper is there. So, that takes some time, right? So, based on the logic of 1 year passing when it was just a moment for him, it takes him a few moments to get to the gate. That should be like years and years and years transpire between him walking up to the gate and then finally getting to see Krishna. But it doesn't, because time is under Krishna's control. He can change that. He can change that. So, it's not always the same. In the Brahma Vimana Leela, One moment of his time was 1 year on earth. But in other circumstances, it's not. He comes here and he interacts with the people on this level, and it's by their time, not his time. You see? It's changeable. And there are so many examples of that, just like Krishna and Arjuna. Krishna and Arjuna went to the heavenly planets to visit Arjuna's father, Indra. But when they came back, everybody was still here. It's not like Raivata Maharaj, when he went to Brahma, by the time they came back, so many generations had gone and everybody. So it's changeable. It's not always the same. It's not a fixed situation. Krishna and Arjuna went to see Mahavishnu. They had a conversation with him. So how many years should have passed on earth? Trillions, so many years. But still they came back and everybody was still here. So Krishna can manipulate time. Time I am. He's the controller of time. So it's not always the same in every situation. In the Brahma Vamohana Leela, one moment was a year. But when Brahma comes to visit Krishna in Dwarka, it takes him some time to walk to the gate, to go see Krishna. But it was by earth time, not his time. Understand? Anything else? Suhas Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Just out of curiosity, we're hearing how the extent of lifespan is there for the demigods. Now, a couple of things. Number one, what do they do in terms of remembering the Supreme Lord? In other words, here we chant Hare Krishna in this world. Now, when you get that position as a demigod, you're there specifically because you have some punya. You're enjoying life. You have extent of life, and everything's very nice, beautiful. So do they actually develop a desire to go to the next realm, to the spiritual world?
All right, so we'll deal with that first. It's mentioned, I can't give you an exact reference right now, but it is mentioned that, yes, they're there because of their punya, and because of that, they're basically pious individuals, more pious than anybody here. The most pious get elevated. Krishna says, the most pious get elevated to the heavenly realms. So, by nature, they're God conscious. They know that there's a Supreme Lord. They worship Him. They glorify Him. By different methods, some of them are more, even in the heavenly realm, some of them are more ascetic. They meditate. But for the most part, they're enjoying. They're enjoying life like anything. Every day is a Janmasthami there for them. They have big festival. They celebrate. They worship the Lord with paraphernalia that we can't imagine. So they have everything at their disposal. But most of them are on the level of running down the bank account. They just enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. It's described in the Mahabharata very clearly. They appear, they give birth, but the child appears and immediately grows up to look exactly like the parents. Beautiful adult. So everybody there is a beautiful adult. You can't tell who's grandmother, who's child, who's... They all look the same beautiful. And they stay like that. Their bodies don't deteriorate like ours. They stay like that for their duration of life, which, as I mentioned in the beginning, is about 11 billion years. And then when their pious credit runs out, they come back to earth. They just disappear. One day you're having a party and you say, "Where's so-and-so?" Gone. Back to earth. But some of them, it's mentioned, they, because of their strong desire for spiritual life, they get elevated to Mahalok, Tapalok, Janalok, like that. They go up, 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 all the way up to Brahmaloka. And if they're really, really surrendered, then when Lord Brahma's planet gets destroyed at the end of the universe, they go back to the spiritual world.
Then my other question would be, okay, so what's going on when we read in the Bhagavatam that the demons and the demigods are fighting? You know, like say, for instance, they're the Somaras. They're fighting for that nectar of enjoyment and increase of what's going on there in terms of you being in the heavenly planets. They're fighting with each other, they're battling, killing each other. So what kind of elevation is that? In other words, here you are in the material world, you get elevated to the heavenly planets, and next thing you know, you're fighting with demons, man, and you're being crushed, and then Indra stealing the horse sacrifice. He's got 1,000 eyes. Like, what's going on in terms of all?
Yeah, well, because again, they're still conditioned to some degree. They're conditioned souls in the material world. They're just less conditioned than we are. They're generally speaking more intelligent. They're on a higher level of interaction as far as God consciousness. But they're not completely pure. They're not completely pure. And they have desires. And their cousin brothers, the demons, they have stronger material desires. The demigods are Sakama devotees. They're devotees of the Lord, but Sakama. They have some material interest, some material desire. The demons are their cousin brothers. We know Kashyapa Muni, through Aditi, gives birth to the demigods, and through Diti, gives birth to the demons. So they're related. But and just like within our earthly families, sometimes there's very strong sibling rivalry, to the point of sometimes one brother kills another brother, especially in royal circles. Prabhupada mentioned that. That especially the Mughals, they couldn't trust their own brothers, cousins, relatives to run the country because they would just kill them and kick them out. So they hired Hindu ministers to run the country. So like that. So the demons and the demigods, they fight because there's envy. The demons, they want what the demigods have without going through the pious process. See, the demigods have their position because they're very pious. The demons want that position, but they don't want to go through the pious process of worshiping God and all. God, what God? I'm God. So they will fight to get what the demigods have. So they attack periodically. And the demigods have to defend themselves. But the demigods themselves, like you said, they also have their faults. Sometimes they become envious, even of earthly kings who are performing sacrifices, like Prithu Maharaj and with Indra. Oh, he's going to become too powerful. He's going to become Indra. He's going to take my position. So let me trip him up. You know, like that. So they're not pure souls. They're very, very highly elevated, very, very pious. But as long as you're in the material world, you're under the control of the three modes of material nature. The demigods are basically in the mode of goodness. But as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the modes will fight for dominance. So if you don't become a pure soul, completely surrendered, then some or other passion and ignorance will creep in and attack you. So your goodness becomes shaky and you develop some envy, some anger, like that. One of the ladies first, Mother Kamalini. Hold on.
While we're on the topic of time, I wonder, you know how Jai and Vijay were cursed to come for three lifetimes to the material world. So they are different, those three incarnations, there were millions of years between them. So what did they do in the meantime, waiting for that next birth?
I don't have an answer to that. I can't think of any reference that says that. But, you know, again, when you're in the susupti state, which we've all gone through probably many, many, many times, there's the waking state, the sleeping state, and the susupti state, which is compared to like when you get a general anesthetic. So when you're in that susupti state, you can sleep, literally, for billions of years, and then you wake up again and come out, and you don't even know that. So even though millions of years may have gone between one birth and another, when they finally take birth again, they don't even remember that. That's Krishna's arrangement. The entire material universe is wound up into the body of Mahavishnu at the end, and we stay in animated suspension, as it were, for billions of years, trillions of years, before we again come out and take birth. But do you remember that? Do you remember sleeping for trillions of years? No. No. So we've all been through that experience of being inactive for trillions of years. But because we're in that susupti state, there's no consciousness. We're still alive because we're always alive. We're eternal. But our consciousness is so covered, so completely covered, that you can be inactive for trillions of years and not realize it. Is that okay? Yeah. Mother Karta?
Well, about what she asked, there's another explanation to that one. That's one from one point of view. But the Leela of the Lord is eternal. It's happening in this universe or some other universe. And so every time that there is the appearance of an avatar, it happens in every universe. There's millions of universes in the material world. And so it's a constant thing. It never stops. Like Krishna Leela is also like that. It's happening in some universe or other. It's eternally in the material world while there is the manifestation. And then in our universe, it's trillions of years, millions of years between one incarnation and the other, whatever. And so then these demons are going through one universe, another universe in the Leela also. So it's always happening. The Leela is always eternal.
See, I'm not sure about that. It's not that everybody who participates in the Leela is the same in every universe. In Arjuna's case, it is, because somebody wrote to Prabhupada and asked him directly.
That's right.
Is it the same Arjuna that goes to Krishna from universe to universe? Prabhupada said yes. But that's not necessarily the case, because, for instance, in Braj Leela, we know that some gopis were promoted. They were sages in Ram Leela.
That's right.
But that doesn't mean that they have traveled in every universe the same sages.
Right.
So, it's very, very complicated. In some cases, it's the same soul, even though they're Jiva, that travels in all the universes that with the Leela. But in some cases, not.
But
the sages who became gopis in the Leela here in
Gokul
are not necessarily in every other universe. They may be other sages in a different universe. So it's not always the same souls that travel in there.
And
so in the case of Jaya Vijaya, I'm not sure if it's the same Jaya Vijaya in every universe.
No.
It may be a different
Jaya Vijaya. Not necessarily. But the Leela is always happening. So
the Leela itself goes on.
You know,
yes.
Even the Leela of Nrisimhadev or the Leela, it's always happening.
Yes.
So then there is the time is so relative because it's in different universes. You know, you never know. But these things are always happening and might be a different person. But, you know, there's always Kamsa, there's always, you know, all these people that are in the Leelas.
But her question was about in this particular universe, when Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu were killed, then their next birth was Ravana and Kumbhakarna. But there was some time in between. So she was asking, what were they doing in between that birth and this birth? So I don't have a specific answer, but I'm just my reply was that the time between births can be very short or it can be very long, but to you, it doesn't matter. Because if you're in that state, susupti state, trillions of years can go by and you don't even know it. You don't know it. Okay, Granth Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivedanta ki jai.